Thanks for joining us on the Port City Church podcast. More information about Port City Church is available at portcitychurch.org.
All right, good morning. In case you are just joining us, that is what our series is about how we often live our lives and interact with other people in a way to get them to make you like me or to get them to make you like me. And I think you can all tell the difference, right? There's a way in which we sort of think or believe that our relationships will be better, we'll get along better as people if other people were just like us, if they thought like us, they believed like us, if they looked like us, if they acted like us. In fact, you know, we're the coolest people we know, and if everybody's just like that, the whole world will be better. And that's one approach to how we deal with people. The other is we try to make them like us. We try to make them pleased with us. We try to make them think that we are cool or okay or whatever it is, and we become into one of these two camps of what we called a couple weeks ago people pressers, kind of squeezing people and pressuring people, or people pleasers, which is always about trying to make other people think about us in a certain way. And so if you've not been here, this is week three of this series, and we're going to talk today really about some personal assessments and understanding where we are in terms of these things called relationships. I also need to be very clear, this is about relationships with human beings in general, not marriages or dating relationships, human beings in general. If you get this confused, you're going to look at this through the wrong lens, and I want us to talk. It affects our marriages, but it's primarily about how human beings interact. It seems that we have been placed on earth in order, proximity to each other in a way that forces us to get along or to live together or whatever version of that we might be. So we need to understand what it is. And what I've tried to do in this series is instead of just talking about love or relationships in sort of generic terms or active terms, to really back up and try to define them. Because what happens is when people end up saying things like this, well, here's a person that I know and they're hard to love. They're hard to love. And what you mean is this person is difficult and therefore I don't feel the way about them the way I think that love would have me feel about them. Therefore, they are difficult to love. And someone who is easy to love is someone who it's easy to feel for them in a particular way. So we have this idea of love that doesn't really define it. It just gives us sort of a window or a way to think about it, and it's often misleading. And so I've tried to back this up, and really that's the premise that we've been operating under, is there's this concept called love. And we've looked at a couple of passages. We've looked at Jesus's vision for what he prayed for. We've looked at a couple of passages from 1 John that say that, God is love. Love comes from God. Everyone who knows God loves. Whoever does not love does not know God. There seems to be this correlation between God and us and God and how we love others. And you see that all throughout the Bible. And so there's this idea, but I still wanted to back up enough and really define things, really get a good handle on what we're talking about when we're talking about love and we're talking about relationships. And so the way I have defined relationships is not by people or by position. This is my husband, this is my wife, this is my son, this is my daughter, this is my friend. But by actually trying to back up and say, if we were just to look at what a relationship is, how would we define it? And my definition or our definition is this, that a relationship is the framework through which love is both expressed and experienced. Relationship is a framework that you live within. It's something that happens between you and another person, and there's a purpose and intention to it. I believe that the purpose that God has established for this, based on what I can understand, isn't about people making you feel better about yourself, which is what we often do. The people who make you feel better about yourself are the people who you're in closest relationships with. And when that ceases to be the case, you usually find other people to be in relationships with, and that's sort of our pattern. But relationships are actually a framework that have some purpose to them. The framework is for you and for me to be able to express this love that we have, that we've been given, that we receive, to offer that or extend that or avail that to other people so that that's experienced within this framework. Now, this changes the way you interact with everybody. What if every human interaction actually had the capacity to demonstrate love? Like, what if it actually had the capacity to do that? And it's funny, we talk about love as sort of this flighty thing, and I want to get more tangible about it today. But we think about it, but it's interesting that if you were just to observe human culture, if you were just to back up and look at what happens in human beings, we inadvertently, innately talk about love. Even people who don't know God or care about God end up writing love songs. I mean, for crying out loud, Motley Crue had a love song, right? It's like there's something inside of every person, no matter how hardened, no matter how rocky, no matter what it is, that says there's something that longs for us to be loved, to have this sense of giving of ourselves or some force that makes things different or better. That every encounter, every relationship that you are in, every encounter you have has the opportunity for you to both express the way in which you are loved, and it has the opportunity for someone else to experience that. Every single one, every interaction that you have with another person has, you have an opportunity to experience someone else's sense of their belovedness, of their worthiness, and experience it within a relationship, no matter how deep or how surface that, how brief that encounter might be. Now, the idea is that the more we live with people, the closer we are to those relationships, those sort of core relationships that kind of tear outward, the more intimacy we experience. And I don't mean intimacy by sexual intimacy. We talked about this. I mean intimacy by the fact that we are sharing and availing ourselves to one another in a way that it gives and exchanges life, that there's something that happens. So we had to back up and really try to define love. And the way I define love is this, is love is a force. It's a force. I know we can say love is a verb and love is this and love is, but I want to talk about it just to sort of back up and say that love is a force. It comes from somewhere and it goes towards somewhere. It's a force that always breathes life or always breathes worth and value into the soul of another. That love is a force that comes out of us that breathes worth and value into the soul of another. These are really important things for us to understand. I'm gonna put them up there kind of small just so you can sort of hold on to this. It breathes, it's a force that breathes both worth and value. And these are really important things for us to consider or think about because I mean them very, very particularly. So we've been talking about this. Now, here's the thing. And I'm trying to sort of back into this and think about just humans and think about how we're, you know, we're born into this world. We've talked about this. We come into this world and we are not independent. We come into this world completely vulnerable, completely dependent on everybody else and everything else. We have nothing to offer for a long time. You realize that, right? We offer, other than goo-goo and gaga and how cute, we don't offer anything productive to society for quite some time. And it stands to reason that if this is sort of the way God has orchestrated this, this is the way human beings come into the world, it stands to reason that our first posture as humans is to receive. Our first posture is to receive. We're looking around and going, can I trust anybody to take care of me? And the way we demonstrate, yes, we can trust somebody to take care of me, is we stop crying. And then everything for the first little while is about not making you cry, and you're building bonds and trust and attachment and all these things that intimacy hinges on, depends on. Sociologists, psychologists, anthropologists have all talked about this, that these fundamental attachment things are so important for how we are as human beings and how we get there. So it stands to reason that we are first receivers. So here's what else stands to reason. If your first posture is a receiver, right? If that's the first thing that you are, then what you're going to do is you're going to spend all of your life looking for that thing. You're going to spend all your life trying to find how is it and what is it I can connect to that I can trust. Everything about every human being speaks to that, gravitates towards that. This is not about introverts or extroverts. Every human being, you come in and you are always looking and seeking a connection that you can trust because you are first a receiver. We have to have a source in order to do anything else. So that's thing one. Now here's the interesting thing. There's a pattern that if you don't find this or you don't have a reliable source, here's what's gonna happen to you and it's gonna happen or it's gonna happen to you and it's gonna get played out in all of your relationships. The first thing that happens is when you're not sure or you're seeking and you're not sure if you can trust is you're gonna be exploring all kinds of things. This explains a lot of the things that people explore in our culture in terms of grabbing relationships. So we're looking for the whatever thing that we feel might create a connection that we can trust. And so we're exploring, we're always looking, we're trying new things. It's largely because there's a devoid of something that's substantial or serious enough to sort of bear the weight of what you're looking for to really do that. So we explore. Then once we sort of explore things, we start manipulating people. And we do this in the subtlest of ways. If you ever walk into a room and you talk about, oh my gosh, my hair looks so bad, right? You're not looking for someone to confirm that. You're not looking for someone, yep, you're right. What you are looking for, right? You're looking for them to go, oh no, that's the best haircut you've ever had. Your hair looks so great, right? That's what I do in my message. When I go and say, oh, Julie, my message is so bad today. I don't want her to say, you're right, it was. It was terrible. I want her to go, oh, Mike, you're the best pastor on the planet. You're the best preacher ever. You're better than Billy Graham, right? You're better than anybody. That's what I want her to say. And what I'm doing is I'm using sort of my sympathy or her affection for me to manipulate her, to get her to make me feel the way I think that I deserve to feel in that moment. And we do this in a million ways. We do this in a million ways. For some of you, you're trying to seek admiration by your position or by your money or by your wealth or by your success. Or some of it's all kinds of ways. You know, if you dress a certain way to try to draw attention to your body, what you're looking for, you're manipulating people to find something that you're looking for. This happens in a million ways. We manipulate. When that doesn't work, we start to subtly demand this. And this is where it becomes a little bit more aggressive. Maybe it's a sort of a passive-aggressive behavior. You withdraw from someone when they don't do what you want. You start to threaten. You start demanding your way. You start putting pressure on people. You start forcing your way. And then eventually, you end up taking from other people. And what this means is it doesn't have to be abuse. It's just when subtly you start taking someone's self from them. They start becoming less of themselves when they're around you because you're taking so much from them. Some of you are in relationships like this. Some of you have friends like this. Some of you have dating relationships like this. Some of you have, because they're constantly either taking someone else's self from them. You're taking from them. I think in our culture, this is the problem. We are a chronic culture of takers, and we don't have a source that is sufficient for us to live in this, and so it's causing havoc in most of our relationships. So we're going to do sort of a quick assessment today. I've kind of created this little chart, and I've done this kind of in an exploratory way. So you're going to add to this. You can take this home. You can think about it. You can talk about it. I've already had people come up after the first service and go, hey, Mike, have you thought about it this way? I'm like, oh, that's really good. That's what I want. I want for us to look at this and to begin to press into this as a church, as a body, working together to understand, because our relationships with each other matter. Our relationships matter with each other because of what Jesus has said and prayed for. He said that he longs for us to be in him and for him to be in us, that we would become one like they are one, like he and the Father and the Holy Spirit are one, they are one, that he might be seen in us. So there's a lot at stake in this. And there's a lot at stake for our own mental health. There's a lot at stake for our own emotional health. There's a lot at stake for our own sort of productivity and innovation and creativity. But there's also a tremendous amount at stake when it comes to our designed image-bearing glory, like the reason we're put here. And so that's what I want for us to get an accurate, sorry, I got something like floating around me here. I want us to get an accurate picture of this. Now, last week I left you and I talked to you because there are two questions that I basically ask you. Question number one centers on this sort of horizontal plane. It's pretty straight. And the question that I asked you was, how or who knows you? Who knows you? That was the first thing we talked about. Who knows you? Who knows you, your fears, and not just your spouse. Your spouse is good, but who outside your spouse? Who that works with you day in and day out? Who that sees you kind of at your worst moments? Who knows you really well? And on this scale right here, this is kind of our willingness to avail ourselves, to be known. Again, this is not, we don't go, well, I'm an introvert, because I appreciate that, but it doesn't change what your soul was built for. You're not built for isolation. You're not built for being alone. You might draw energy off being alone, but that's not what you're built for. Human beings are built to relate to each other. We're looking for connections. We're looking for connections that we can trust, and they have to be sourced from somewhere. So that was the first question, is how willing are you in this? To avail yourself, to give of yourself. Who knows you and how available are you to others? You know, on this end, and I'm not talking about throwing up on people at the grocery store like, oh, how are you doing? Oh, my whole life is falling apart, blah. I'm talking about bringing yourself, your whole self to these places. On this end of the spectrum over here, I'm talking about people who conceal. People who conceal themselves. You're kind of like the person, oh man, this guy's just, I know it's romantic to be a mystery person. It's really good for romanticism. It is terrible for relationships. And it's this idea of concealing. What are you withholding or hiding from other people? That's scale one. And number two, the second scale is vertical. And this is sort of the scale that measures or assesses our worth. Our worth. Up here is a sense, God, that's going to drive me crazy, is a sense of worth that has a, forget it, that has a sense of this is bringing ourselves, this is kind of being aware of ourselves. And the way I thought about this is this one here is our sense of self, this is our sense of contribution, what we bring. And so we're going to look at this, and immediately you're already starting to go, oh, on a worthy scale, I don't feel like a dirt bag. So I'm like, I'm somewhere in here. Some of you are going, hey, dude, I'm up here. We're going to talk about that in just a minute. So that's what I want you to do. And here's what we talked about last week, because here's why. Where you find this is extremely important. It's extremely important for what you bring to everybody else. It's very important for what you bring to everybody else. Now, because this is you're going to see how this works together, I hope, by the time we're done. Now, what you have to understand, and what I taught us last week, that the vision that Jesus prayed for, he looked and he's praying to his Father, and he says, Father, as you are in me and I am in you, I want them to be in us. And we talked about last week pulling up a chair. Whoever does not love does not know God. That's the statement that we're kind of wrestling with. Whoever doesn't, our deficiency to love is connected to our inadequate knowledge or knowing of God. And so we got to figure out what this is. And what we learned is the way we know God is to be still and know God, to be still. And so I was reflecting on this because I always think about going to the beach and being still. And it's, oh, this is so good. Be still and know that I'm God. But when I put these chairs up here and I said, be still and know that I'm God, and I pull up a chair, and I did this week. I pulled up a chair. I said, what is it like to be still in this group? To sit with the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, and to sit there and hear them talk about me and my worth, and to feel and experience and allow them to love me, to recognize that Jesus in his death was the demonstration of God's love for me and therefore the validation of my worth to him. Like to sit in that. You know what you do? You start to squirm. You start to squirm. You start to go, I don't like this. To be still isn't just to be silent. To be still is to remain in a place, even when it's uncomfortable. Like how many of us have relationships where we've ever been still? Because most of the time, I mean, we occupy our time by accomplishing and doing things, and we don't ever embrace the relationship. Like to be still and know that he is God is to simply remain there, even though you don't feel worthy, or even though you're not really sure, or even though you just remain in that place, to be still there, to remain there, to stay there. To be still is connected to this idea of knowing the same is true in our relationships with other people. Oftentimes, we are so busy occupying all of our time and effort and energy to avoid the things that are actually happening in the relationship that we just run past them. And then as soon as that gets tired or, oh, we're looking for some other place to be, we're never remaining or we're never still in them. To actually know and to be known. And this is a really important thing for us to figure out, or at least to begin to figure out, how to do this. And so we've been looking at this verse, this passage that a lot of people are familiar with. It's usually done at weddings. And it's the famous, here's how Paul defined love, which is not at all what it is. It's here's what happens when love exists. Here's what happens. And we read it like this. Love is patient, 1 Corinthians 13, chapter 4. Love is patient and love is kind. It does not envy. It does not boast. It is not proud. We talked about this last week. We read this as a wedding as though it's ceremonial. But if we read this as like instruction or descriptive, we start to see something very different. Love is patient. Do you know what that means? If love is patient, if love is a force that breathes worth and value into another person, when you are having to be patient with someone, it's not this. That's not love. Love looks and says, I'm going to be patient because I see worth and value in you. You are worth waiting for. Do you see how different that is? Like when someone's not where we want them to be, it's not a matter of us just going, hope you catch up one day. It's you got to actually, for love to express itself in patience, you've got to actually see value and worth in them. You've got to have something come out of you and towards them. That love is not envious, it does not boast, it is not proud, means that it doesn't need anything. It's not grasping for anything. It's got a sufficiency that we've got to understand. It keeps going. It says this, it does not dishonor others. We talked about this last week. It is not self-seeking. It is not easily angered. Love is not easily angered. Short fuses are not love, right? I'm guilt number one in this, but it is not easily angered. If I'm going to have a posture, if I'm going to understand this, I've got to recognize what's happening when these things are going on. How do I move from wanting to be loving to immediately demanding my way? It keeps no records of wrongs. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. It always protects. It always trusts. It always hopes. It always perseveres. Love never fails. That is really nice at a wedding. It is really hard in the real world. Love never fails, really? Have you ever had what felt like love fail you? Like, that's what I began to think. Here's what I did. I sat down, so I'm sitting here in my journal, and I looked at this verse 7 and 8. And I wrote down, I said, love always protects. And you know what my first thought was? I don't know. I've been in situations where I gave myself and extended myself, and I got stomped on. I got hurt. So maybe love doesn't protect, but it says it always protects. Do you see the questions? Because everybody does this. You start making a list of all the people that didn't do what love said it would do. We start making this list. Love always trusts. Then I'm like, oh, yeah, if I trust this person, you know what they're going to do. Do y'all have a list like that? It's exactly what I did. Love always trusts. But you don't understand. Love always hopes. Yeah, that just makes me feel guilty because I gave up on this person a long time ago, and now I feel bad. Love always perseveres. And I just began to noodle on this list to try perseveres. I just began to noodle on this list to try to think about what this feels like or looks like or what love does. If we're talking about there's this source or force that always breathes worth and value, we're going to kind of separate it up here. Then how is it that this protects and trusts and hopes and perseveres? And this is what we're going to look at. So everybody's got their scale or their deal. And when you start to put yourself on this scale, there are a couple things that happen. You see, we got these four quadrants. This is the more willing you are to bring yourself. And I'm talking about a sense of integrity, not in terms of not lying or not cheating, but integrity of wholeness, of bringing your whole self. When someone knows you, they know you, right? If you have a persona at work, a persona at home, a persona with your friends, and a persona at church, you are on this side of that line. Okay, that is very hidden. That is the opposite of integrity. Does that make sense? That means there are things that you have, if your wife knew or your kids knew, you wouldn't be fired about it. There are things that they knew about your, you know, at work, or if you're always over here. This is when you start to bring your whole self and you are not afraid of your contribution of who you are to the people around you and to the things around you. And this is your sense of worth. Some of you feel like, I'm as good as I'm ever going to get. In fact, I may be better than everybody. And then some of you are like through the floor. Now, here's what happens. When you start to scale yourself, what you'll see is some of you are going, dude, I am high worth. I got a real healthy sense of self-confidence. But you are unavailable. You pull back from other people. Your operating principle is validation. Let me tell you why. Because your source of worth, when you haven't figured this out, is always going to depend on how successful you are or what other people think about you or your performance. So everything is going to become about validation. This is why you say things like, aren't you proud of me? Did you see this? Everything is about your resume, or everything is about this. It's always that, because everything's about you're validating why you think you're worthy. And everything's going to serve that purpose and serve that end. You can tell this is happening to you because your first posture is usually defensiveness. Whenever someone says something that seems to be an attack, and we're usually very sensitive in this way, they say something to you, your first deal is defensiveness. I have this happen to me. People have say things to me, and they'll say something to me that maybe questions or calls out something that maybe needs to be corrected, I need to be held accountable for. And my first thought is, oh yeah, you wanna go? Right, you wanna go? Come on. I'll tell you all things bad about you. We'll have a little match here, and I guarantee I'll win. And what, instead of going, hey, you know what? Can you help me understand? Can you tell me more? The reason is because this posture here, to be willing to avail yourself to another person, isn't just about people knowing you. It's actually about you understanding other people. To avail yourself, to bring yourself to every relationship and every situation, is actually the posture to understand other people. This is why most of us don't understand anybody, because we hold ourselves so guarded. What we wind up doing is we wind up listening to them to try to figure out what they're saying, so we can figure out what they're saying lines up with what we already believe, and then we're gonna say back to them in that posture. The way I think about this is, a lot of people, right, if you don't have this sense in you, what you end up doing is you end up filtering and not listening. You ever had someone do that to you? You ever done that to somebody? You're hearing what they say, but you're not listening to them. You're actually filtering what they're saying through what you already believe and think, and there is no understanding. You're just filtering and then making all of your assessments based on that. To avail yourself, to bring your whole self, is to be free to understand the perspective of another human being. It could be completely wrong, but at least you begin to understand, and that's the beginning point of where value and worth begin to be communicated. Every time we shut that down, we shut off love. So a lot of you over here, defensiveness. The other thing that happens here is we're usually chronically approval. All of our successes matter. We parade our resumes. And then ultimately, when this sort of gets really bad, you wind up with contempt for other people. If you have a sense, and I'm not going to talk about that. If you have a sense that other people aren't worthy of you or your time, it's probably because you are way up here, way up here. So down here, low sense of worth, very unwilling to bring themselves. Down here, you have isolation. And this is kind of self-explanatory, speaks for itself. But the problem with this is where people sort of land when they start doing things to themselves. A lot of times we think that our removal or our withdrawal from people is actually a way of protecting ourselves. But what it actually does is it sabotages yourself. Because what you're doing is you're just creating a sense of isolation that you think you deserve because you don't think you're worthy. Do you realize that there's in our culture, a lot of young men, a lot of young ladies, fewer young men, will engage, that there's cutting themselves, self-harm. Those all fall down here. And what we're doing is we're saying we don't deserve anything better, so we're going to continue to use things to make us feel the way we think that we deserve to feel, which is terrible. And we withdraw and we isolate, and it creates a whole spiral here. Low sense of worth, withdrawing from everybody. Now, on this side is this willingness to here I am, but very low worth. And this is really where codependency exists. Because you don't really need to feel codependency. You don't really actually need to feel any more worth about yourself. What you need is for someone who needs to be needed to need you, and you create this cycle. Have you ever seen this? I know none of you have. Now, this is chronic in our culture. We gravitate towards this. People who have sort of a low sense of themselves, but are really personable and even good with their problems. You want to see all my problems, and you find someone who can solve your problems, and you just kind of create this, and you just create this dangerous thing. You don't ever become. You just stay stuck. You just stay stuck here. And this masks itself primarily because what happens is you sort of give up on worth and really give up on love, and it just becomes about attention. As long as someone pays attention to you, you're okay. And attention is a cheap substitute for love. You ever want to know about your worth? You know, I'm going to stop there. So up here, right here, is this beautiful thing called connection. And connection, if I understand this correctly, moves like this. Because here's what happens. You can't wait until you feel completely worthy to ever avail yourself. That's never going to happen. Or it may happen in 40 years, be too late. 60 years for some of you. You have to begin to see this as a way to say, okay, God, I sense this and I'm inclining myself to others. I'm sensing this. Because when God, what happens is he pulls us in this direction. This is where we are loved by God. And then we are free to love other people. Whoever loves knows God. This is where you should begin to look at this. There's still but I think you get the idea. Your inclination, your ability to receive God's love for you is always going to manifest itself in extending yourself to others. Now, if that line starts to tick up this way and back toward this way, there are reasons, right? There are reasons. It might mean you've been burned. It might mean all these other things. And this is where what we need, this idea of love, what it does here is so important. So begin to think about this. How, because what love is doing, it isn't trying to make sure that our hearts never get hurt. It isn't trying to make sure that we never have emotion or there's no accountability. It doesn't do that. What love does, and I begin to write this down and kind of put a list together, love protects this connection. Love makes sure that this connection is always available in every single relationship, in every single moment of your life. It is always available. It protects the connection. Now, what you're going to have to do is, this is a two-way street. We're going to talk about it in just a minute. Give me about another minute. Love always trusts. What does it trust? It trusts the process. It trusts the fact that love always changes. It is a force that breathes life and value. Love always, always, always brings something through to completion. That's what it hopes. What keeps hope alive is that there is a promise that we will become what we were intended to become if we can learn to receive. It's an unstoppable process. I am confident of this very thing, that he, God, who began a good work in you, is faithful to bring it to completion. Love hopes in that process, and it perseveres. You know what's beautiful about this? It means that this force of God's validation of your value and your worth is more powerful than your emotions or your circumstances. That is an incredible thing. Love is a force. It's not passive. It's a force. It comes, and it comes to breathe life into your souls. It comes to bring value and worth, to affirm and to build. It comes to change and form and cause you to become. We have to figure out ways to, and this happens in the context of our relationship with God and our context of our relationship with other people, is you have to bring yourself. It's not just for you. Vulnerability is not just for you. Your vulnerability actually contributes to other people. And the more you withhold, the more you are withholding what God has put you here to do for the people around you. Most of us live down here or over here, and we end up using people. We don't ever really understand relationships. We don't really ever understand, because I'm always trying to get something from them. I don't understand when I come in, I bring something. I change, they change, we change, and we become. I've seen this in my own relationships with the people that I have that are around me. the depth and the freedom and the accountability and the growth. It does not, it's not like you go, well, here's who I am. And they go, well, that's just how you're going to be. And we're just going to kind of, you know, deal with each other's mess and be messes together for us. You actually change and grow and become. In the context of this relationship, you change and grow and become. So here's your homework. Here's your homework. I know everybody here has already found out where their friends are on the scale. Oh, I know where my wife, I know where my husband, I know where my friends are. All right, so the first thing is, I want you to find where you are on the scale. This is your homework. Where are you? How willing are you to avail yourself to others? How well do you know yourself? Like your sense of self. Have you come to be okay with the fact that you're not somebody else? It took me a long time to go, it's okay that I'm not somebody else. God has made me to be me, and I know it sounds goofy and trite, but it is one of the most freeing things I've come to believe. It frees me from trying to be somebody else, to imitate somebody else, to compare myself to somebody else, or to listen to the other times when people compare me to those same people. What keeps you from this? And I mean, just on this side, when you start, what keeps you from this? What keeps you from this freedom of being yourself? And here's the question. What are you afraid of? What are you afraid of? You begin to look at this, answer those questions, and see where you're at. You might not be right. What it does is starts to give you some help. The people who are struggling down here, you don't need more availability. You need someone to breathe worth into you. People over here, you don't need more worth. You need more this. You have to begin to move in the direction of the thing that you seem to be deficient in. We tend to stay in the other area. Second question, this is where it's going to get fun. Where are those close to you? Now you get to pick on somebody else. So you make a list of the people that are around you. And there shouldn't be like, there's not 25 people on this list. There's like four. Tops. Where are the people that are around you? Where are they? And then you go, well, how do we do this? How do we connect with each other? Here's a really simple way to do this. It'll be the most awkward thing you've done in a long time. This isn't about your assessment of them, but it is about a conversation with them. So what you do is you sit down with your list. What am I afraid of? Where am I to avail myself? Blah, 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 blah. And then you sit down with them and you say, here's where I am. Here's what I'm afraid of. Here's how well I think I'm doing this. And here's where I have you. And they say, here's where I am. Here's what I'm afraid of. Here's how well I avail myself. And here's where I have you. You do that and you are having a conversation that you will never regret. It might be one of the most difficult things that you've ever done. It might be one of the first times you've ever exposed yourself, and you know what I mean, right? Like availed yourself to another human being in this way, and it just might be the most freeing thing that you've ever done. If you want to understand relationships, you start here. And I'll bet you what you discover is going to blow you away and set you on a path. Begin to see people and yourself and the purpose in those things differently than maybe you ever have before. That's my hope anyway. So I'm going to pray for us, and you're going to go do your homework. Fair enough? Perfect. God, thank you. We all struggle in many ways with manipulating, with demanding, and often with taking. In ways that we don't necessarily want to admit. Father, there are those here that have been harmed deeply by another human, and maybe the opening up isn't going to be a friend, but maybe a trusted counselor. May they have courage, and we would be honored to help with that. God, there are a lot of people who have relationships that really probably just need to be tended to and a conversation. And I pray that that would happen. We might be a little off in our assessment, but that you would use that to bring understanding and depth and transformation to those around us and to ourselves. And God, I ask that you would do that. One is so that we can learn how to love and be loved and know and be known. But more so, Father, that we contribute to your purpose and we become a more full representation of your image, that the world would see and know that you are indeed God. And Father, I ask this in the name of your Son, Jesus. Amen.